We don't have to try any harder. We don't need to fight anymore. We don't have to try any harder. No.
Hey, Jacob.
1, 2, 3. Hi, Scott.
I know. I almost forgot the opening line.
I was waiting to see if you would actually remember your line.
Brother, how are you?
Man, I'm so good. So good. And also so happy to see your face. It's been I don't even know how many months it's been since we did this, you know?
I don't either. Maybe 4, maybe 5. It's been a while. And it's funny. I never felt like we weren't going to do it again. I thought it was possible we might not do it again, but mostly I felt like at some point we'll start recording podcasts again.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your feeling about that?
Well, similar. And, you know, it's interesting. When you have a podcast that you're not just doing 2 or 3 episodes a week or whatever and really pushing it out there, it can be easy to wonder, I wonder if anybody ever listens, you know? But I've gotten emails and messages on social media saying, hey, okay, we've been patient for a long time. Where are you and Scott? Which makes me happy to hear that, you know?
Absolutely. Me too. Yeah. And even more than that, I'm just happy to be talking to you.
Well, honestly, I love that we've never put this project, under pressure like that to say, okay, how big can we make it? You know? And so it's always felt very natural with you, Scott. And I honestly, selfishly, I just want to hear you catch me and everyone up on what's been going on with you for the last 6 or so months.
Yeah. I mean, same. I'm in Michigan now. I got back here a week ago tomorrow, and I've decided to move back to Michigan.
Wow.
So that feels exciting after for quite a while being nomadic, but then also for quite a while at the end of those nomadic months, really wanting to land somewhere, but not feeling clear about where that was going to be.
Yeah.
It was going back and forth between Detroit and Santa Fe. And I ultimately landed on Detroit, and it feels really good. And I'm very excited. I'm in the midst of a house hunt, you know, looking for a rental. So I've been seeing lots of properties and haven't found any winners yet, but I like this process. It's very much a roller coaster. I mean, I think most people listening can probably relate because we've all been looking for homes at different times. And I have great karma around home stuff like that. I think, my energy flows really easily, typically around finding homes. And I usually land in a place that I'm really excited about. So I don't bring to the experience a lot of anxiety. Mm. And at the same time, I am noticing, like when you first start, it's really exciting and you see some places and then, you know, you see a handful of places that are just kind of like downers, and Michigan is not cheap anymore, you know?
Okay, so really?
That's kind of an awakening to see the prices here along with, so it's been this bit of a roller coaster, but also not a crazy roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
The dips aren't that high and low.
Well, Scott, as you know, I lived in Michigan for 10 years and, I enjoyed my time there. And also I just love being in the Northwest so much, but this is the one time of the year, every year, that I get very nostalgic for Michigan because of the driving up through the mainland, you know, through the orchards and pumpkins and colors and everything. And yeah, it's just what a quintessential fall, you know?
Absolutely. The cider mills, was that a part of your life here?
Yes, totally.
The donuts that you can only find at cider mills.
What the hell with the donuts at the cider mills? Yeah, good point.
They're so good. I had a friend out, not recently, when I was here a few years ago, but she was out during the fall and she's from California. And took her to a cider mill. It was her first time there. And we ate those donuts with the hot apple cider. And she's just like, I can't believe this exists.
It's a very special experience. And, you know, the Midwest, especially the northern Midwest, parts of Ohio and Michigan and parts of Illinois and Iowa, compared to the West out here, or even Santa Fe, you know, it's such a gentle kind of an older feeling, not as older feeling as the East Coast, but such an interesting feeling. And so it just feels, especially during a time of year like this, it feels so pastoral and almost like, you know, it just came right out of a Mary Oliver poem or something.
I just saw one of your cats run up the stairs, and it's like seeing a celebrity because you post them so often. I'm like, was that Crack Weasel or the cat himself?
That's the cat himself. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm like, oh my God, I glimpsed the cat himself in real time.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm convinced that people are mainly hang around with me hoping for cat posts. So I'm happy to share that. You know, it's like, here, take the stage, guys.
Well, I'm hoping for a cat book at some point, of course, right? I mean, come on, with all their quotes. They're prolific, those two cats.
And snarky also, it turns
Very
out.
Very snarky, especially the cat himself.
Well, man, so you're in Michigan. I just came back from Santa Fe where we did this amazing writing retreat with Anne.
Yeah, talk about it. How was it?
I'm still in the energetic aftermath of that. You know, Scott, you do this kind of work with people, and so you know that leaning into creating that kind of a space, especially for, you know, in this case, it was almost 2,000 people, 350 in person, but really a lot joining us from around the world. Mm-hmm. In my experience, working with a large group of people with the deep intention and commitment to having a space where the invitation is for transformation, you know, the invitation is to see and really embrace those things that have held us back for so many years, in this case around writing. But as you know, everything's connected to everything. And so what gave me such tremendous pleasure was to watch so many people, the light bulb come on, and they're like, oh my God, I thought that my hindrances had to do with skill about writing, or it had to do with some other factor, when in reality, it was really old childhood beliefs that I had about, I'm not good enough, you know, I'll be rejected, all those limiting beliefs, you know. And to watch people begin to really take strides forward, it just, I mean, I live for that. So it was really exciting.
Beautiful. And give us a sense of one of the things you taught there or shared.
Well, a lot of my work this time was, I did present a couple of times, but a lot of my work was around really holding space. Sam Lamott and his partner, Claire, who are also both partners in a writing room, just did a masterful job on stage. It was really beautiful to watch. I think one of the most exciting moments for me, Scott, was, you know, this was after many years of producing events. The team and I really put a lot of focus into the flow of this thing. And so it was intentionally meant to be a version of the hero's journey with an overture, an invitation, a threshold. And each one of those phases came with work, you know, different kinds of work from the various presenters. And then the initiation and the set sail, how do you take this home? But the initiation was something that was so exciting to watch, because we had people do work around their tables with, what is your essence, not just as a writer, but as a person, as a human? What do you really know that you're here at a soul level to express? And then also, what are the things that you're willing to let go of, to cut out, or create a boundary with, you know? And so as they came up table by table, we had built these portals with all these, you know, all these flowers, and those were at the main doors during most of the program. We brought them up on stage and created this portal. And then as each person came up, on their name cards, we had their name tags, and on the back of them, there were three spaces, mysterious spaces. And so as they wrote down their writer contract, you know, I'm a powerful, kind, free writer. As they came across the stage, they symbolically threw away that list of things they were committed to letting go of or creating a new relationship with. And then they would hold up their name tag and say, I am a powerful, kind, free writer. And the rest of the room would reflect it back. Yes, you are. And it was one of those experiences that, I mean, just watching all of us, you know, I was standing in the back, just holding space for all of that. And, it was deeply emotional. I couldn't stop crying just watching people really claiming that, you know.
How beautiful. I have goosebumps listening to you talk about it. That's really lovely. Congratulations, truly, on such a successful event and beautiful event.
I loved experiencing it with a group. You know, my team and I went through the Atlas Project earlier this year, and that was deep shadow work, transformational work. And of course, you can't recreate that, you know, that's more like a cohort of 50 with a cohort of 2000. But we pulled elements of that, the reflective parts and the deeply introspective parts. And it was really a joy to watch it work with a large number of people from around the world, you know.
I'm sure. Wow.
But Scott, your brand new book is like today, or when is it? What's the official...
Next week, next Tuesday, the 17th.
Yeah. Well,
whenever you're hearing this, it's October 17th. It's officially coming out. So Enough As You Are, it's called. And so that's exciting. It's funny. I'm so focused on the house hunt too. And then I have this book coming out. Like those are the two primary foci, is that the word, in my life right now. And we're having a launch here just outside of Detroit in a suburb called Ferndale, which is where I am right now, at this lovely place called Boston Tea Room. So if you're listening and you're in the Detroit area, come to Boston Tea Room at 6 p.m. on October 17th. And yeah, it feels good. I just saw the book. You know, Amazon oddly sends out books as soon as they get them in their warehouse. So people, like 2 weeks ago, people were texting me pictures that they'd received the book, even though the publication date isn't officially until next week. But I'd been on the road, so all these friends were receiving the book and I still hadn't seen it. I only saw it a handful of days ago when I arrived here and a book finally came and I got to see my book well after many other people.
Is that right? You still hadn't? Yeah. Oh, wow.
I still hadn't seen anything because I've been moving around so much. So it feels good. It's exciting. I feel good about this book and happy that it's going to be out there in the world.
You know, Scott, just the title, and of course I know you and the work behind it, but just the title, to me, there could hardly be a more important message for us to internalize right now at this time on earth, you know, like genuinely coming into that enoughness and sharing the abundance of that medicine with ourselves, with our close relationships and with the world, even if we don't go out there and like preach it, just being that is medicine. I just love that you've created this.
Well, thank you. I think it's huge medicine. I mean, at least for me, Jacob, I think I'm coming to discover, you know, my path or one core path for me in this reality is around self-acceptance and self-love. I mean, obviously I talk about it all the time, but I'm seeing it even more so how much our relationship with ourselves really does serve as the foundation for how we show up with everyone else in every place, with our planet, with everything. And
yeah,
I just keep coming back to that truth, you know, and we talk about this all the time that it really does start from within, but you don't think you see people who are in good relationship with themselves advocating for war and dehumanization. And it's just not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, and more and more, I just feel more deeply in alignment with love than ever before.
Yeah.
And unwilling to participate in with tribes, with anything that doesn't have as a foundation a commitment to to love and compassion and empathy. You know, I can't do it.
It feels like investment of energy in exactly the opposite direction, you know, of what we want to create, you know. So giving energy to more war, giving energy to more, you know, resistance. It can feel paradoxical, Scott. It's like, you know, the world feels so full of opportunities to go to war right now, literally or metaphorically. And I was just reading the Power Path people. Did you ever meet?
I never met them.
They live right outside of Santa Fe. But I was just reading, you know, we're coming up to tomorrow is a new moon and a partial solar eclipse. So they have a lot of information about that. But it's so interesting. I was glancing at this while you were talking, because I remembered when you said, you know, self-love. They said October 8th through 15th, this window we're in now, this is a good window to work on your self-esteem and self-worth and raising your havingness to deserve better. Be ruthless about removing yourself from any toxic situation that belittles your self-worth. It's also a good time to set boundaries and new rules with regards to relationship. The truth may be challenging, but if you focus on the lessons learned, you may gain understanding that will inspire a passion for something new. And it's just, I just find it so fascinating that that continues to be an inside job every single time.
Yeah. And it continues to be one of the only things we actually have control over, which is why for me, it's so important to give energy to it, because we are all so often giving energy to things we have no control over. And not only giving energy to those things, so often the energy that we're giving to those things is it's damaging energy, right? Mm-hmm. It's rage. It's our ignorance. It's our resistance. It's so exhausting, mm-hmm. you know, and it feels for me, I feel like what I'm even talking around, I don't know if you're talking around. I mean, there's a war happening right now. I mean, there are many wars happening, but there's a war happening right now between Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. And I haven't said anything about it in social media. I haven't spoken about it. I haven't, in any time I've tuned in to anyone who is talking about it, the comment sections are absolute shit shows.
Yeah.
It is so unbelievably insane to me, the inability in so many of us to hold contrasting truths or contrasting realities. And I wonder where you land with this, Jacob, because I have posted at different times in my social media life over many years, posted a lot about politics and watched the shit show that happened in my comments and the backlash and the fighting in the comment sections.
Yeah.
I have chosen not for a long time now, I've chosen not to really post about politics and give energy to that, because I understand that I understand what's going to happen, that there's no way to speak about anything without it creating some sort of war in your social media page and outlet. And there's so much of that happening right now that for me, the choice is what it becomes about ultimately is, am I going to contribute to this energy or not? And is my opinion about this so important that I need to contribute to this energy or not? Right. And do those who follow my work, can they trust that I find what Hamas did absolutely abhorrent and unjustifiable or not? And can those who follow my work trust that I also believe the occupation of Palestine is absolutely abhorrent or not? Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, I don't know. It feel and I'm talking about this in an exasperated way, as though my exasperation is important, and it's so not in the context of what's going on over there. I'm not even trying to suggest that at all. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I do, and I'm glad you brought it up. You know, I grew up in a very conservative fundamentalist environment. I've said that here before, of course. But it's interesting because I grew up in that environment where Israel could do no wrong. Of course, it feels like several lifetimes ago. And so most of my sentiments have shifted a lot over the years. This is one where I don't have a strong opinion. And I am careful to say that because, of course, just like you said, and I love what you just said, can you trust me to see this action as being abhorrent and the other side of it as well as not being innocent in terms of, you know, a lot of the things they've done. And it's really that reflects in so many ways the way I feel, Scott. And, you know, I know that for me to go on the war path in one direction or the other isn't going to change the situation. And it is going to deplete energy that I need to create more of what I see as medicine in this world, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's what it comes down to, I guess. And that it's tough though. I don't know.
So
go ahead.
Well, no, I want to sit with this with you because it was so interesting during our lead up to our retreat and then during and after, you know, so many people show up there with a passion to address what's going on in the world, whether it's, you know, this situation or just in general, the racial imbalances or the inequalities between the sexes, all these things that genuinely are asking to be addressed and rebalanced, you know? And so sitting with them with that and going, this isn't an attempt to turn down your passion or suggest you shouldn't feel passionately. You know, I was so grateful, Scott. For me, this retreat was a dream come true because of the representation in such a different way, the sense of real diversity across the board. And we're just getting started, you know, but it felt so good to be able to welcome so many people of color and, you know, gay and trans. And it was amazing to me to see, you know, and everyone entering in and actually participating together. And so my heart is like feeling very full and grateful right now to watch that happening. And being able to say, at least inside the bounds of this experience, we're not going to be pulling politics into it specifically, or, you know, some of these issues, because what we're doing here is deeply personal. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't take that back to the world in whatever way you choose, of course. But holding that space of, and the question, Scott, of where does that energy of I need to speak out, you know, like bell hooks or James Baldwin or some of these, you know, many, many, many writers down through history have been the ones who stood up and spoke out and it made a difference. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to bounce it back to you and just ask, how do you hold that relationship? I know somewhat about how you do it in your own work, but how do you feel about that?
I mean, how I hold it in the choices I make is generally it's an internal nudge that is like when I have felt called to speak up about politics, it was this driving voice inside that said, write something about this. Right. And there's a host of horrific things on this planet that I could choose to write about. Do you know what I'm saying? There are any number of horrors going on right in this moment. Yeah. And yet there are billions of people on this planet and we all, you know, we all feel those nudges or those calls to speak up about whatever it is we feel called to speak up about in the moment. And then I weigh that nudge with what is the value of my voice right now and how is it going to contribute to what's happening mm-hmm. in this dialogue, in this moment. I feel called to share this piece I read this morning It's a little long. Are you okay with it? You don't even know what I'm about to read.
I have nowhere else to be, Scott. I'm okay. Okay. I trust you to not read something 3 hours or something.
But. No, it's not that long. It's from a man, a Jewish man, an Israeli man, a man who lives in Israel. And he wrote, I'm not going to read all of what he wrote, but I want to read starting from, because people were checking in with him about how's he doing, how's he feeling. And here's what he wrote. My answer to the question, how are you? I'm angry at Hamas about the vicious slaughter and widespread trauma they inflicted gleefully on so many people. I'm angry at Israel's vaunted security and intelligence communities and institutions, whose often appalling moral decisions and violations of rights have been justified with recourse to the necessity for security, for nonetheless failing to keep us safe. I'm angry at this absurd government led by a man who has time and again placed his own interests and power above duty to country while posing as a superlative patriot and has never paid a political price. I'm angry at his party for clinging to him despite his amorality or immorality, because doing so has served their own interests. I'm angry that for years he funneled cash from Qatar to Hamas while posing as the only one who can keep Jews safe. And I'm angry that so many people bought into this, and angry that so many still do. I'm angry that more than 2% of the population somehow doesn't want him to resign immediately. I'm angry at everyone who voted for any party in this government who hasn't apologized for empowering such a group of corrupt and irresponsible chauvinists and zealots. I'm angry at Hamas for undercutting the struggle for Palestinian rights and lending credence to the caricatures of Palestinians as bloodthirsty savages who just want to kill Jews, which is far from the truth. This will not only cost Palestinian lives in the immediate, but it will also set back their pursuit of justice and dignity by decades. They have alienated hard-won support in the international community, and they have made it harder to stand for their recognition, rights, and justice. Here in Israel, it makes answering the refrain that they don't really want freedom, they just want us all dead and gone, exponentially more difficult. And they have reinforced the flawed attitude that any failure of brutality to subjugate others is evidence of the need for more brutality. It keeps going. I'll read a couple more. I'm angry at the harm that this will perpetuate for Israel and Israelis now and in future generations on so many levels, dehumanizing themselves and us, dehumanizing us all, plunging us ever deeper into a morass of hatred and violence. There is no security and dignity for Israeli Jews if there is no security and dignity for Palestinian Arabs. I guess what he goes on to talk about his own place in this, the anger he feels at himself, in what I appreciate so much about his words and his heart is his willingness, as someone who is an Israeli Jew living through this horror right now, his willingness to still come into his heart and come into the voice of love and look at the full picture of what's happening with compassion and with rage, right? And it is so easy to forget the compassion component. And I'm not saying that we even have to when we're in the midst of the terrorization, the terror and the rage around what's going on. And yet it is only that component. It is only the love, the compassion, the willingness to see forgiveness still before us, no matter what's going on. Those are the only things that are ultimately going to lead to peace and that can ultimately lead to peace. Yeah. So, and that's not what's happening here. And it's not where we're being led. And it's, and Jacob, also, I can speak about it from a safe place of being in Michigan right now, and not being confronted with war, and not having my neighbors murdered and slaughtered by a terrorist group. And at the same time, it's like, I can't imagine what it's like to also be a Jewish person who is having been through this and seeing Jews who were literally slaughtered by a terrorist organization who is out to slaughter Jews, and then seeing a world of people who are in their language seeming to justify it because of what the Israeli government's doing. And I think it's really important to recognize that explanations and justifications are not the same thing. You know what I mean? Like people, the reasons people do things, like terrorism is not justified by anything. I don't think it's justifiable. And I would never seek to look for a justification for it ever. And at the same time, I feel like our empathy calls on us to look at explanations for why might this be going on in the way that it's going on, while at the same time not justifying violence in any way. And I would never want to be judged based on what our government is doing, in the same way I would never want to judge Israeli citizens based on what the Israeli government is doing, or Palestinian citizens based on what a terrorist organization is doing, right? And in holding all of that as much as we are able through some sort of lens of compassion and love. I don't have any answers for it. I just know that what I'm seeing online, I don't feel okay participating in it, because it's war.
Yeah.
It's the energy of war and the energy of violence.
Yeah. And Scott, in our show notes, I'm going to put a link to a compassion practice. It's called Just Like Me. I think we've talked about this before. And it goes through this list. I want to invite our listeners to find someone who can represent others. You know, those we call the others, whether it's political or some other, you know, thing. And go through this practice, you know. It starts out with, begin by being aware there's a person in front of you, either in your mind or actually sitting across from you, a fellow human being just like you. Silently repeat the following phrases while looking at your partner. This person has a body and a mind just like me. It goes on. This person has during his or her life experienced physical and emotional pain and suffering just like me. This person worries just like me. This person has felt unworthy or inadequate at times, just like me. Goes through this entire list. And I would invite everyone to do this right now in this time we're in, where compassion is difficult to find sometimes. And I love the monologue you just shared with us, Scott, because I feel like you really expressed the spectrum, you know, and to realize that compassion isn't excluded by also feeling all these other things, anger, fear, sorrow, anxiety. It's, you know, compassion is not antithetical to any feeling. It's the ability to witness all of them and hold them with arms that are bigger than just one issue or just one side of an issue, mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely. That was beautifully put, brother.
Thank you.
And as you were talking, I was even thinking about where I wasn't even being compassionate was for the governments. You know, it's like, I think one of the greatest gifts of the Trump years, honestly, for me personally, was being shown how out of alignment with love I can be and how lacking in compassion I can be. Because again and again, I kept going to this place of just, I mean, hatred, I guess, or close to hatred of Donald Trump, like really, really dark, ugly places in the way that I was feeling about him and other politicians.
Yeah.
And I had this really like low bottoming out moment around it. And it was just like life really shaking me and saying, you profess yourself to be a man of love. This is not what it looks like. This is not how compassion looks. And so even the Israeli government, even like Netanyahu, whom I'm not a fan of, and like, can I hold compassion in my heart for whatever led him to make the choices he's making, as much as I do not agree with how that government is behaving? Can I hold my heart open to terrorists? Like, if we're talking about really living in love, is it because the thing about it, Jacob, is I don't believe our heart closes to anyone. I don't believe that love closes to anyone. And I don't believe that anyone winds up participating in monstrous acts because they were born a monster.
Yeah.
Right? And so for me, the invitation in my heart is to hold it open and hold the possibility of compassion and love and forgiveness open to everyone on this planet, mm-hmm. no matter how much I disagree or abhor their actions. And for me, that is love in action. And I'm not always able to do it, but I do believe that's the goal. I do believe that our greatest teachers were able. I don't believe that Buddha or Jesus was, I don't believe they were unable to hold their hearts open to love of all beings.
Yeah.
I don't believe God. If you believe in God, and if God came down to this earth, I believe that God would see every being on this earth as a child of God and would therefore offer love to those children, right? And it's like looking at what do we aspire to be? Like, who are we idolizing? Like, who are our teachers? And if Jesus is your guide, how much are you living in alignment with those teachings? And is this what you're aspiring to live in alignment with? And all this stuff is so fucking provocative. Like, I, even as we're talking about it, there's a part of me that is like sick to my stomach, because some people are going to listen to this as an interpretation of justifying Hamas or justifying the Israeli government or justifying anything that I'm not at all justifying. And yet, how do we create healing on this planet if not to return to love? It is the only fucking way. No, I've talked enough.
Well, I don't think so. I think I'm sitting here listening to you and grateful, honestly, for this discussion, Scott, because I feel that it's so ripe for reactivity, you know? And I feel like that's one of the blessings of my life over the last several months has been, I've been too busy, really genuinely too busy to follow any rabbit trails, you know, of things politically. I mean, I pay attention, I'm curious, you know, but I've just noticed that my energy hasn't been able to attach to it. I've been so focused on work in areas that feel really important to me, you know, and absorbing. And as a result, these things that have been happening in the last several months, and then most recently, you know, it's not that I feel aloof or unaffected by them, but because I'm not in the shallow end of the pool and just bathing myself every day in the dialogue on either side of it, you know, I'm just not bathing in it every day and keeping my spirit just up in its fight or flight anger state, you know, I just notice a different sense about it. And I love that you just said, you know, people are going to listen to this and they're going to react, you know, it's in not that either of us is attempting to be controversial, but you know, because the hair trigger is so tuned up right now across the board, and we could start just listing almost any issue, whether it's, you know, gay rights, abortion or anti-abortion things, all the way to Russia, Ukraine, to
gun violence.
I mean, my God, all of it, right? I mean, there's so many layers to this. And if we allow ourselves to stay immersed in in that, in the daily irritation of our souls of, you know, what, and also, but it's, and I don't say that as if I'm superior to that. Like that is, that's the reality. And it's difficult. It's, there's so much attraction from the various poles, you know, in these cases, there's so much magnetic attraction, you get pulled into that thing and then be completely identified with whatever that side might be. And so I just feel like the ability to stop and take a deep breath and remember that every one of those feelings is valid. And also compassion means the ability to witness, you know, it means the ability to witness with love, with curiosity, all parties. And for example, with the Israeli and Palestinian issue or the Russia-Ukraine issue, I mean, what's interesting, Scott, is the more we understand about things like, you know, wow, what's that word that just escaped me, but essentially the passing along of generational trauma and collectively groups of people who live and are affected by, you know, the factors that are going on in these areas. We can't, most of us Americans really can't understand, you know, comprehend the dynamic between, say, the Ukraine and Russia. We can't comprehend it because we aren't living it and it wasn't affecting us. And the same with Israeli and Palestinian issues. But we can understand and feel some of the things that are going on in our own country, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think being aware that if you really zoom out, being aware that some of these groups inside our country, outside our country, everywhere are really so deeply affected by things that just keep getting passed along generation to generation. And on this very small scale, you know, we do that in our own families. We do that inside of our own communities and friend groups. You know, we pass along things, beliefs, traumas, pains, and those things affect us at a very deep subconscious level. Like it's not just the rational. It's easy to read the facts about something and go, well, this is insane. Like, why would you do that? Or why would you do that? And then forget, though, that most of this is coming up from very deep unconscious places and wounds that have been held generationally, you know, and within groups of people, they've been held and passed along these beliefs, you know, and the pains that go along with them. And I don't think that changed anything, except it helps me retain some perspective in the middle of it and go, to your point earlier, Scott, we will not heal that cycle unless we're willing to step out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't even, we haven't even spoken to the ways in which governments are manipulating these scenarios to create more division. And we don't even know the extent to which that is happening. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But that is certainly another aspect of what is playing into this. And yeah, I think it, I love that you've been too busy with what feels important in your life and what you're offering to get into the weeds around this stuff. I really appreciate that, because for me, that's a reminder to control what we can control, like connect to the aspects of our lives that light us up, knowing that by doing so, we are going to be offering that same light to others in the world, and that it is not necessary to participate in every conversation around every crisis, or even any conversation around any crisis, should you choose not to. And if you find yourself wanting people in your life to be more vocal about things, I really believe that that's an invitation for you to step into your voice in a different way, perhaps. If that's the call you're wanting others to take, look at ways in which you can make that call in a bigger way, because that's, again, ultimately all you have control over.
Scott, it's funny. I was on a different podcast yesterday, and the host was, you know, talking about a lot of ideas, you know, about spirituality and things. And it was really an interesting conversation. And little by little, we started putting down concepts and started being very real with each other. And it's so easy to get into spiritual concepts when we try to deal with, you know, things that are so troubling or confusing. But we were talking about the difference between control and influence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that a lot of us have heard and are doing our best to internalize the idea that we have very little control, or maybe no control.
Right.
Scheme of it, like no real control. But also, I think sometimes spiritually curious or seeking people can get into a binary idea about it, like, okay, well, then I'm just going to let go of control of everything, because mm-hmm. control is wrong, and the idea of control is a fallacy. And I can appreciate that, and I think that that's a valid practice, probably more so than anything else. But what I love is the idea of influence versus control, which means that without trying to change other people, I can exert influence simply by being in love, in wisdom, in compassion, you know. And there's this Joseph Campbell quotation. He says, "We're not on a journey to save the world, but to save ourselves. In doing that, you save the world. The influence of a vital person vitalizes." And Scott, I just feel so strongly in my life that is the medicine over and over and over again. Be the medicine. Mm-hmm. Be the love, you know, be the change. And these things sound like cliches, but man, it is deep work to ask in this situation, within my own arm's reach, not the whole world, not Hamas and Israel, not Ukraine and all, you know, not Democrat, Republican, all this stuff. Those are forces much too large for any one of us individuals to really change or control. And so we can feel overwhelmed and we can feel powerless in the middle of that. And one thing that makes me, returns me to a place of feeling centered and also having some power in a situation is not power over the situation mm-hmm. or the people involved, but power to be in the middle of it. Who do I choose to be in the face of that and realize that every moment I spend in that place of being centered, in that place of being able to breathe and let my shoulders relax and witness others with curiosity and compassion, that actually means that I'm returning to health. And I know we've talked about this so often in this show, but to me, you know, a diseased cell spreads disease around it. Yeah. But evolutionary biology and all of that teaches us, medicine teaches us, that a healthy cell actually has many times the power, many times the energy to affect change in a body. And so by focusing on what's diseased and trying to stamp that out, I'm likely diminishing the power of my being in my own joy, being in genuine health, and understanding that that is power, being in true joy. Going outside and talking to the neighbor down the street just for a few moments. I ran into some dear friends yesterday as I was finishing a walk, and, you know, they were going through some things, and we didn't, you know, it wasn't like either of us dispensed any great wisdom. Simply being together changed the temperature for them and for me. Mm. I'm dealing with some post-retreat kind of slump internally, just like, wow, exhaustion. And I've done enough of these to be expecting it when it happens. But yesterday was kind of one of the first days that it actually hit me full force, and I was feeling very dark. And I, even though I know the solution, Scott, for that, or at least the dose, is, all right, it's a beautiful day outside. Just get up and go outside and walk. But the part of me that was so loyal to just feeling dark and feeling mm-hmm. exhausted and all that did not want to do that. So it actually took me grabbing myself by the ass and saying, we're taking a walk, even if it's just around the block. And so I didn't expect to run into my friends, but when we sat together and just shared, you know, like Mary Oliver says, tell me despair yours and I will tell you mine, and then talk about how we find ourselves back in the family of things, you know. That was my experience. I came home lighter, and my friend texted me later and said, hey, I just wanted you to know it really made a difference. And again, I didn't sit there and try to change it. It was just simply people exchanging genuine love and humanity together. And I think we forget sometimes how simple and small the actions that are required to actually bring the light back up in the room, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful, brother. I love your distinction between influence and control. And I love the reminder of how important connection is, even just simple connection with our neighbors. And for me, you know, I'd like to toss out an invitation to all of us to just sit with what it is we're about to say or how it is we're about to react, and just consider, even for a moment, if this is contributing more love, more compassion to the story, or more violence, you know, more toxicity. And if it's the latter, you know, do we have to offer it, you know? And, or is there a way to shift how we want to offer it, so that we haven't stepped outside of our hearts with it? And by the way, none of this is, I never want to suggest that rage isn't, an anger isn't a justifiable reaction to life experience, and also a really healthy reaction at times to life experience. It's not about that. It's not about suggesting we have to be like kumbaya about the horrors of the world. It's about recognizing that how we choose to show up within the context of it influences not only our own lives, but those around us and the world in general. This really is all energy. Mm-hmm. And we are, if you feel powerless, just look, just share some fucking toxic rage on your social media and see the backlash you get, and you will see how powerful you are actually in influencing people. Yeah. And so seeing that, we have to believe that when we're showing up with a commitment to love and compassion and empathy, that we're also creating influence from that choice.
Yeah.
You know, and first and foremost, we're influencing our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Yeah, you know, I'm going to loop back to the retreat and what I said before. I didn't quite finish. One of my great dreams has been, you know, after doing this work for a long time, Scott, I would see how it often attracted pretty much a very narrow demographic, very narrow group of people, you know, and I love the demographic, the group that has been so avid about personal development and self-help and spirituality for decades. And I could feel, though, this like the need to bring the barrier down so other groups could come in and genuinely know that they are not just, you know, like welcome because it's the politically correct thing to do, but it's like, no, this is part of changing the world. It genuinely is. And it's interesting, the more that other groups who have been subjugated, who have been harmed for so long, come into the circle, it creates a very interesting conversation, and it's a needful conversation. And being able to acknowledge the rage, being able to acknowledge it and hold space for it is part of that, I feel. And so for me, it's been part of my soul mission, and growing with conviction to it and commitment to it, is to say, I will not be satisfied until I feel that whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm offering, is, it feels safe and it feels genuinely inclusive, and celebrate the voices, celebrate the entire spectrum, you know? Yeah. But I love that you came back to that, like everything we're talking about and the balance and the compassion and being able to step back and all of that, does not diminish the experience of rage, does not diminish the harder emotions, you know? I think that's so important to say.
Absolutely, not at all. This is all part of the human experience. You know, I think, Jacob, if the one thing I'm noticing in my life that is contributing to my life in such a beautiful way these days is something really shifted in a deeper way with me, where I am, I've been on this journey for a while, what I'm about to say, but I feel like it's kicked into a deeper gear, and I hope it remains. I understand that it could change and leave me, but just a really committed willingness to bring acceptance to whatever it is I'm thinking, whatever it is I'm feeling, with more grace and more love than ever, and with an acknowledgement that this too is part of the human experience. Every single fucking thought you have is a part of the human experience. Every choice you make, every word you speak, and we can choose to shame ourselves for it, or we can choose to bring acceptance to it and understand that this too is human and it's okay. And oh, a cat is now walking right in front of Jacob.
Crack Weasel is
crack
here.
Crack Weasel. Hello, Crack Weasel. Oh. I don't, if you're watching this, you're seeing Crack Weasel right now. If you're not, Crack Weasel just gave Jacob a little nose butt. And, it was really cute.
He's about the most uncat-like cat I've been around, in that he is so friendly. I bet everyone in the neighborhood knows him, because he just loves everybody, you know?
That's sweet. That's awesome.
Scott, I feel like you actually just really put a beautiful bow on this conversation. Not that I'm ready to be done. Actually, I've missed you. And so I feel like we could spend the rest of the afternoon talking. So I don't know.
It's a good time to end, actually. More hours. I think it's a good time to close this conversation out. If you're feeling it, I'm feeling it too for now.
Yeah. And I just want to thank everyone who's, you know, been patient with us this whole summer, you know, between episodes. And, and I just love, Scott, that you and I made the commitment before we even started this project together to really go with the energy of it, the flow of it. And it feels good to be back, you know, feeling the energy to have these conversations. And I just love you. I love the spirit you carry out in the world, the honesty that you carry. And I know it's not just words in your books or on this show or anything else. I know it's really what you seek to do, about being honest about this is how I am working with myself. And also, here's the truth of my humanity. I just feel like it's such a great example, and invitation too, not just an example, it's an invitation. How can we do more of that together? You know?
Yeah. Thank you, brother. I feel the same about you. And I'm really excited we're back to doing this podcast. That makes me happy. Is there anything you need? Is there anything you have coming up you want to tell listeners?
Well, I have my very first outside the US retreat coming up in February. It's in Sayulita, and a local yoga studio leader and I and some of our other people around us are going to be offering this in February in Sayulita, and it's on Punta Sayulita, which is, if you've ever been there, have you been to Sayulita?
No, I haven't. No.
So if you're sitting on the beach in Sayulita, it's off to the left. There's a spit of land that goes out into the ocean, and that's essentially a compound. Now it's a bunch of beautiful homes that we've committed to filling. So it'll be 30 or so people joining us there in February. I'm so excited about that.
What is it? What's the workshop or retreat?
Well, so it'll be basically a week of self-discovery. There'll be yoga. The yoga teacher asked me, she's like, we want to call it movement, because it genuinely isn't just for people who know yoga. It's uh-huh. movement, it's meditation, it's self-discovery. And my intention with this is that people who join us will make a space for themselves and allow us to guide a process of getting really, really clear on what is it that I long to create in my life, in this world? What is an important soul theme that I need to pay attention to? And what are the things that have held me back from that? So we really seek to offer a greater connection for people who join us, in addition to having a lot of fun and being in a sunny, beautiful place in February, which for me sounds amazing.
Of course. That's so exciting.
I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Why is my book coming out?
Yeah.
Were you done? Did you have more?
Yeah, no, I just want to make sure we brought attention to your book.
We'll put, yeah, it's October 17th, Enough As You Are, and get it.
Wow, I love that. It's like
I'm getting better at promotion now. I'm not wishy-washy. It's just like, get it, please leave a review. Look, I hope you enjoy it, all that stuff. And then David Gandelman and I, we have another retreat. We did a retreat in Spain this summer that was so wonderful, and we're doing one in Bali in May.
Oh my God.
It's called, okay. We're just calling it Sacred Bali because Bali is so, it is so sacred, but the retreat is going to be breath work and writing and meditation.
Ah, beautiful.
And it's going to be lovely. So,
okay. So I just love that you and David are doing these things. And could you give us a thumbnail about Spain? Partly because Spain is the only place in Europe I visited, and that was 2015. Uh-huh. So it's been, almost 8 years. It has been 8 years. But I really enjoyed my time in Spain. So can you just tell us a little bit about where you went and what happened there?
Yeah, it was so beautiful. We were outside of Montserrat, about 45 minutes outside of Barcelona.
Okay.
In this valley of the Montserrat Mountains where this ancient monastery is. So it's a very stunningly beautiful place. This retreat center was so lovely. The energy there was just beautiful. Like the people who owned it and worked there, everyone was just really lovely. And we did breath work. We did a lot of meditation because that's David's specialty.
Mm-hmm.
We used writing as a tool, you know, for deeper engagement with ourselves. This one was called Live Your Truth. Mm-hmm. And Bali will be similar. The vibe is really coming into like deeper honesty with who we are and what we want.
Yeah.
Kind of what you're talking about, what we want to create, what we feel. If you can't make it to Mexico with Jacob, come to Bali with me, or come to both.
Well, I love that, Scott. You know, a couple of things we're going to be using. I'll actually send you a link to this. There's a really beautiful assessment out there that deals with saboteurs. And I just took this the other day. It was like, wow, that is such a clear mirror image of the things that I continue to work on and struggle with at times in my life. And so I think sometimes people can hear, you know, purpose or, you know, what you would love to create. And there's some part of the psyche that goes, okay, but what I need to know what's been holding me back. And so that's part of the self-discovery work that we'll be doing and sharing with people is, you know, completely in a place of compassion for it and gentleness and curiosity, not shame, not like, yeah, you piece of shit, you've been dealing with this your whole life. You're ever going to figure it out, you know?
Absolutely.
But that to me, I think it's important for people to know that that's part of the process is really in a space of safety and love and curiosity to be able to look at those things and then ask, how would I love to transform my relationship to these things that have been part of my life for forever, you know?
100%. And then the connection that develops between the people at these retreats, when it's a smaller group that you can really connect with and you have deeper one-on-one conversations and deeper group kind of experiences, it's just it's so beautiful. It is such a gift to be a part of these types of experiences. So
yeah, and I need to also mention that as part of this writing retreat we did, this summer we were also launching an app for it. So we actually opened the doors to a writing room collective. So it's an ongoing community, Scott. So I'll put a link to that. We say it's a place for writers and those who want to be, you know, and so I'll make sure that link's in there too. But sounds like we're gonna have a lot of links in the show notes today.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll include a link to what that Israeli man Ori wrote as well for people. It's a really beautiful piece of writing. I think that will maybe help you take a bit more of a deep breath or something, or just feel seen or connected. So, all right, brother. Well, I love you so much. And listeners, thank you so much for being here.
It's up to you to choose how good it can get, how much love you can let into your life, into your heart, before your mind decides it's too much. It's up to you to choose. it's up to you to choose.